Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Shore Thing today. Warren and Ryan here with you. We've got our picks for the divisional round, the conference championship round of the NFL season. So we'll get that. I got a couple props, too. Some props are already out, so we'll I'll give those out. But love that, and then we'll talk a little of the MLB. I feel like we've talked. I don't really get worked up over the Hall of Fame. I really don't, but I like talking about the Hall of Fame stuff. So we'll talk about the baseball Hall of Fame as we've done in the past. Check us out, Spotify, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio app under the podcast section, and Anchor FM. Ryan, how's it going?
It's going good. We're getting ready, heading out tomorrow for a quick little trip. Turned the big 3-0 on Monday, so Jamie and I are taking a little trip this weekend to go celebrate a little bit. So last day of work for your boy, and then I'm out.
Where are you going?
We are going to Las Vegas.
Oh, no, I think you said that.
Yeah.
That should be fun. Your favorite place in the world.
My number one place. And, you know, obviously, Jamie being with child. That wasn't my call. It was hers. And I was completely, you know, not completely shocked, but I was very surprised that she said, hey, let's go to Vegas. I said, I mean, are you sure? She said, yeah, let's do it. I said, okay, let's do it.
All right. Well, that should be fun.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Are you going to be at the Circus Stadium Surf on Sunday?
I know the guy that runs the joint. So I put in a DM. And when I say no, like, that is probably the loosest term. Like, it's like a very distant, like, my stepdad is friends with his dad. They go way back, and he helped me out one time before when I went to Vegas. So
you
like,
should have said you have a connection, not that you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have his phone number. I mean,
well, that's a connection. That's a connection.
So there, yeah, that's
okay. If he saw you on the street, would he know who you were?
No idea.
Okay,
I don't even know if I would know him if I saw him on the street.
Okay, so that doesn't mean you know him. You have a connection.
Correct. Yeah, I can't even say that. Yeah, I have a guy that's
there. You
go. I know of a guy that can.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. That's better.
Yeah,
I feel like that's better to say. Yeah, I know the guy that runs it. Well, you kind of do, but you kind of don't.
Yeah. No, just, not even kind of don't. Like,
I don't know him. All right. So let's get into this. I'm looking up here right now. So we've got we've got lines for all of these Super Bowl matchups. We'll get into that first. Then we'll talk Hall of Fame. So there's so we've got matchups here. What do you think the biggest line of the potential Super Bowl matchups is going to be?
It's got to be Bengals 49ers.
No.
Really?
It is the Bengals Rams.
Wow.
And the Rams would be favored by 5.5.
Interesting.
The Chiefs and Rams, do you have a guess on that? Which I
would say like plus 250.
No. Like, these are spreads when they play each other. Sorry.
I thought meant the odds of them
playing
each other. Gotcha.
My bad. When they play each other. I haven't seen anything of offering like who's going on, because you could just parlay on whatever you want anyways.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. I should have explained. But no, the spread of potential Super Bowl matchups.
Gotcha. So the Rams, Chiefs, I would say Chiefs -4.5.
-3.
Okay.
-3, and the total on that's 53.5. That's the highest total out there. The Rams Bengals was 49.5. And then 49ers Bengals also is also a 3. And then the 49ers and Chiefs, that is -3.5 with the total at 51. So interesting there. I don't really know what I was expecting from the potential lines, but I'm intrigued there.
Yeah, it's wild that they're all like pretty close. You know what I mean? Like, I get they're arguably the best teams, you know, in the conferences matching up, but like a Bengals Rams game, I know the Rams are a little banged up in the secondary, not a little bit, a lot of it. They signed a guy that was retired to come play safety for him. But it's just kind of shocking to hear that they're all kind of in the same general area of what this, you know, of point spread. I figured there'd be a lot bigger numbers there, especially like if you get what I would consider a mismatch in the Chiefs 49ers, or even the opposite side, the underdog of the Bengals versus the favorite in the Rams.
Yeah, no, I would. I agree on that. I'm really surprised the Chiefs are only would be -3.5 against the Niners. I guess maybe the rationale is that, but you can't even look at last year. Like, I'm surprised about that. I'm really surprised that, like you, all these are pretty close numbers. I guess Chiefs and Rams, I'm not really surprised about.
Correct.
But the other ones, I'm kind of surprised by it. I'm surprised by those.
Yeah, no, that's interesting to see. And yeah. obviously that's preliminary stuff, but I would assume that those lines would probably move a little bit once it's all said and done. Like if we actually get one of these matchups, I would at least opening lines would probably be a little bit bigger, I would assume.
And I would think, look, if you think it's going to be Chiefs Rams, why not just take take whatever line you think? If you're going to get that good number now, you could always hedge out of it or whatever.
Yeah.
Why would you not take that? You not take that now.
Yeah.
If you don't think it's going to be there. So that, I found that interesting. But right now we got the lines for the weekend ahead, and we'll start off. We'll go with the first game. That's going to be the AFC this year. What game are you more excited for? I don't really know. I think. Go ahead.
I don't know. It's a toss up. Like, I'm excited to see how the Bengals might do. Like, secretly, I'm kind of talking myself into the Bengals. I don't know why. The Chiefs have been suspected in the secondary quite a bit. T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase obviously have been having great postseasons. Ja'Marr Chase has been having a great season altogether. T. Higgins too. I mean, he's holds his own. CJ Uzama, I mean, he's been a great target for Joe Burrow. So there's just something. I mean, I know how bad that offensive line was last week for the Chiefs, and they were still able to pull it out. For the Bengals, and they're still able to pull it out because of how bad the Titans played and how poorly they called that game from a coaching standpoint. But there's just something that, like, sneakily, I just want to see how the Bengals perform and if they at least hang around. I don't want it to be a blowout. So that one, that's what piques my interest in that game. But then the other game too, like, these are two division opponents that play each other twice a year. They play each other, tight. Like we mentioned last week or on Monday, the 49ers have kind of had the Rams number as of recently, since Shanahan and McVay took over. I think Shanahan leads the series there. I'll have to double check. But so, you know, when you get two division opponents in the NFC conference, finals, or conference championship game. I don't know. When was the last time we saw division opponents in a conference championship game? It's probably been a while.
I think it happens more often than you think, but the off the top of the head that I can think of is probably 49ers Seahawks in the Richard Sherman game.
Yeah, that was probably, that's
just off true. The top of the head.
Because
it's not happening in the AFC because Brady's been in it forever, so he's not gonna no one in the AFC East has made it
right. And even the Sanchez years, the Patriots weren't making the conference championship, so yeah. You know, that adds an extra twist in it. These are two teams that know each other really well. You know, a lot of times you'll see teams in divisions like this draft or sign personnel to kind of combat teams in their division. So that's what intrigues me here. Can Jimmy G continue to do just enough to keep the 49ers rolling? Can Stafford manage not to, you know, crap his pants, even though he hasn't thus far, and that's continue to stay hot and keep things rolling to make it to the Super Bowl? But so both games have intriguing parts. I don't know if there's one that necessarily piques my interest more than the other. There's just, like I said, different layers of each game that's really caught my attention, or that I'm really focusing on.
It was 2014 with Seattle and San Francisco the last.
What about when the Ravens made the Super Bowl? Who'd they play in the conference championship game? That was 2012.
Yeah, they played New England.
Oh, okay.
and they beat him by two scores. Yeah. I think I saw Siciliano tweet it. It doesn't happen as often. It's happened three times since 2000.
Oh, okay.
I can go try and find his tweet. But three times since 2000. Yeah, I think the biggest thing for the first game is going to be if it's Tyrann Mathieu plays, because you saw the secondary late after he went out and he got concussed, that there's going to be some big time issues with the corner and safety positions. You saw that DB get just cooked. And the thing is, these teams played like 3 weeks. They played week 17.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, that they went, the Chiefs were up 14 at halftime. They ended up losing. They scored 3 points in the second half. The Bengals defense really played well in the second half of that game. But I don't know. Look, I think the Chiefs are going to win this. There is something about the Bengals, though. I don't know. You have to think that the offensive line isn't going to play that bad. But the offensive line for the Bengals has been
suspect all year long.
All year long. So why would they not? Didn't they? Let me look at the against the Raiders. They played better, but he was still under pressure a ton. Burrow was, and they got Crosby there. So Burrow was only sacked twice, but he got hit in that game five times. So I assume he was probably up around 9 or 10 pressures. So he's still just facing a ton of pressure. But yeah, I it's like, how can you go against the Mahomes thing? Like, the only thing too is how this is like USA Russia 1980 US hockey.
100%.
But also in the fact that you have to play another game at, like, they only had to play the gold medal game against Finland, but now they would have to play to play the Super Bowl to win it. But to get to the Super Bowl, like, how big of a letdown is there going to be? You got to think there's going to be some part of an emotional letdown. I don't know. I'm intrigued because, like, Chase has every game he's played the last 5 weeks, minus the Browns game when he only played until he got the record, he's been over 100 yards. You got to think he's going to be over 100 yards again. You would think that this game's going to have a lot of points. The total's 54.5. I know I'm kind of just talking in circles here, but 7 is a lot of points in this game.
Huge. I think it is too. And, you know, we saw, obviously, especially coming off the win that we just saw with the Chiefs, going head to head with the Bills. I mean, being down, being up, being down, being up, and really never letting off against, a Bills team that some might say could have been the best team in the AFC. They just ran into the Chiefs, you know, a little too early. And then you see how the Bengals have kind of, I wouldn't say, you know, limped in, but it's just kind of like more of a, they've moseyed through the playoffs so far, right? Like, it doesn't seem like they've had to really like battle or grind to get to where they're at. Granted, that game against the Titans was very close. But I think they'd be the first one to admit if they just played better, that game wouldn't have been close. I mean, you give up 9 sacks and you're still able to win. If you cut that down to even 4 sacks, you're probably in a lot better spot if you're the Bengals, when in that divisional round. So it's tough to even kind of question if you probably look like a dum-dum to even say, you know, hey, I'm kind of thinking Bengals might have a shot here. You know, 7 points is a lot when you look at the two matchups that they're coming off of. But I think that's where people can get in trouble too, of saying, you know, thinking the Chiefs will win in a walkover. They've played much, much better. Kelce and Tyreek finally felt like they both had very good games against the Bills, where it was always one or the other. And even Tyreek really hasn't had like that a big explosive game all season long that we're accustomed to seeing. So if they seem like they're getting things rolling now, I mean, pick a better time. I mean, you can't get much better than this. So, you know, like you said, there's a ton of points that can be scored here. It could very well be a blowout. I don't see that happening. Obviously Joe Burrow, everyone is holding him in high regards and saying, you know, he's the next big thing, which I think he could be. And I think he very well has the mental fortitude and the you know, the kind of, for lack of a better term, he's got the nuts to do it. It's just, can he stay upright and can his team protect him to be able to give him the shot to do it? Because I mean, Joe Mixon's been fine. Joe Mixon's been good. The fact that Samaje Perine's still in the NFL is crazy, and he's still getting, you know, a ton of snaps for the Bengals as well. So you know, I don't think that there's a whole lot of let up or give up in this Bengals team. But at the same time, it's like, you know, sure, David beat Goliath that one time, but more often than not, Goliath is going to win.
What's more surprising, that Samaje Perine's still in the NFL or Mercedes Lewis is still in the NFL?
I would say that the fact that Samaje Perine's the NFL, because Mercedes Lewis, I mean, he's been doing it since like 1984. So it's like that guy, he's still, you know, he just keep it going. But the fact that Samaje Perine, you know, was able to resurrect his career after his abysmal start in Washington, and, you know, credit to him, he's cool just living in Joe Mixon's shadow and, you know, being his backup his whole career. He did it in college, he's doing it now in the NFL. So I mean, hey, if you can find somebody's coattails to ride, go ahead and do it. I know I would.
Collecting a nice check too.
Absolutely, that's what I mean.
The thing about the Bengals, they've definitely not played their best football in either of the previous two playoff games.
Correct.
And I've said both times that if the team that they're playing doesn't shoot themselves in the foot 10 times, that they're out against the Raiders, and then they lose last week if the Titans on offense don't shoot themselves in the foot however many times. So they've definitely taken advantage of games that have both the teams have not played well against them, but they also haven't played their best game. But I think my pick is going to be, I'm going to take the over and have fun with that at 54.5. I don't like taking totals that high in the NFL, but I think there's going to be a lot of points in this game. And then, look, I'm going to have a teaser, but everybody is going to have the same teaser this week, I think.
6-point teaser, tease the dogs?
No, I was going to tease the Chiefs to -1 and then the Niners up to 9.5.
Okay.
I think that's going to be like, if there's a most popular teaser, I think that's it.
You wouldn't want to tease both favorites then? Take the Chiefs to -1.5 and take the Rams to +3?
No, because I don't want to go over the line.
Yeah, that's where you always get, that's where everyone always gets caught right there is when you
I'm a sucker for going over the line, but yeah. I don't want to, in the Rams game, I don't want to, because what, say it goes to overtime and the Niners like score a touchdown or something, you think you would be on the right side the whole game,
mm-hmm.
and you lose. So I would do the Niners up to 9.5 and then the Chiefs -1. And then maybe, hey, just throw in the over, throw in both overs, make it 48.5 and then make it 40. And then there's your, what, that's up to like that's up to +200, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, +260. I could do that, but I like the -1 to, and then to 9.5. The Chiefs, I mean, they have some amazing numbers. Mahomes is in his fourth AFC championship game. They've all been at home. He's never played a road playoff game, which is just shocking. And the thing about him is it's very savvy move by him that he obviously is a very mobile quarterback. We've seen that. But he just doesn't do it in the regular season. And then when it comes playoff time, he's like, you know what? I'm ready to scramble. I'm ready to run. I know I'm going to have to use the legs a little bit, because against the Steelers, look, they blew him out, but he had three carries for 29 yards on those. Last week, he was the leading rusher of the weekend, and his over hit there. But he just is like, you know what? In the regular season, I'm not going to run a lot. I'm going to save the hits for the playoffs, and he's much more active on the feet. And that's just a huge extra dynamic that obviously you need now in the NFL, but he just picks and chooses when he does it more than just like Josh Allen, who runs all the time. And look, Burrow can run, but he doesn't really scramble that much because he's under duress and can't get away from the pressure that much.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right about the Mahomes thing, like where we just don't see it a whole lot during the regular season. And then, you know, we talked about on Monday who was the leading rusher for the divisional games. And did you say it was Patrick Mahomes with 65 yards?
He had 69 last week, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, he definitely has the athleticism to do it, but it's very smart, you know, stay healthy, stay back there in the pocket during the regular season when it's time to go, you know, you go full throttle, full time and make the plays that you need to. The funny thing about Burrow, like you said, yeah, 100%, he can move a little bit. He can run, I mean, more than a little bit. He can run it quite a bit. He's a good athlete. I did see a video from his rookie season, and it was before he went out with the injury, and he was, you know, scrambling, running around, got a first down and got tackled. And the referee, he was mic'd up. The referee came up to me, goes, "Hey man, you got to learn to get down." He's like, "Yeah, I'm still learning that part." And the referee's like, "Yeah, no, I can tell. You need to figure it out real quick, you know, kind of say, hey, buddy, you're going to get yourself killed out here." But so, you know, he still has some mobility and can move even after the knee injury. But the added, you know, because you study a team all season, you see Mahomes not moving a whole lot back there, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, shit, yeah, that's right. This guy's an athlete. Like, he could do it all, really, with the ball. Throw it, you know, scramble, get outside the pocket, and then throw the ball, make you think he's getting outside the pocket and throw the ball, so you drop back into coverage, and then he's going to take the yardage you give him. So, you know, it's kind of a forgotten thing that Mahomes can do. But like, and like you said, last week you see it happen. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, this is 100% something that we need to take account for.
He's plus 1,500 if you think he's going to have the most rushing yards in the conference finals. Last week he was like 70-1, I think. I don't think he was even offered. So that's pretty nuts. And then last week, that was the first time in Patrick Mahomes' career he did not attempt a pass that went over 20 air yards.
That's interesting.
Yep. So teams are playing two high safeties on him, and they're just throwing a bunch of underneath stuff, which is working. And
when you have the fastest guy in the NFL, that usually helps too.
Yeah, but still, normally you're like, hey, they throw deep balls a bunch. They didn't throw any. It does help when you do have the fastest guy in the NFL, but he didn't throw an air, according to Next Gen Stats from NFL, that he did not throw a pass over 20 yards in the air, which I found very interesting.
Yeah.
And how about Travis Kelce pretty much just running the two plays at the end of their last drive to tie it up to go to overtime?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, you know, some good leadership there. And you see a lot of teams like this, like, you know, go back to the Philadelphia Super Bowl win. Foles is the one that calls the Philly special, right? They go over to the sideline to Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson's looking at the play chart, and Foles just says, "Hey, Philly, Philly." And Peterson was like, "Yeah, let's do it." You know what I mean? So you see, like, good teams or teams that have success, like, there's voices all over the team. It's not just, hey, you know, it's my way or the highway when it comes to the coaching staff or the offensive coordinator or whoever it is. The fact that a guy like Travis Kelce, who obviously is one of the leaders on that team, but he's a tight end, is the one that's, you know, orchestrating the final drive is pretty remarkable and speaks to the success that the Chiefs has had and the trust that Andy Reid puts in his players and allows them to even feel comfortable doing that.
That's that Cleveland smartness right there.
Yeah, I thought he was a more Cincinnati than anything, guy.
Huh?
I thought he was a Cincinnati guy.
Well, he's from Cleveland, Cleveland Heights. He did go to Cincinnati for college, but he's from Cleveland Heights, Heights High. I think he says it. He says Cleveland Heights High School or whatever when they do the NBC thing.
Gotcha.
But yeah, no, he's a Cleveland. According to his mom, he was devastated when the Browns didn't draft him.
I think it worked out, bud.
Yeah. And he can always come back and play for the Browns when he's at the end of his career.
So he's got a little extra motivation to beat Cincinnati this week then, huh?
Here's the thing. People in Cleveland don't hate the Bengals.
Okay. I was going to ask you that either last week or a couple weeks ago. Like, you know, obviously probably 90% of Cleveland fans are Ohio State fans. And everyone, if you're an Ohio State fan, you kind of like to claim Joe Burrow a little bit. I mean, he's an Ohio guy too. So are Cleveland fans rooting for the Bengals, or are they just
rooting for the Bengals? I think the whole thing about watching the Bengals is this is one, the Browns, if they had top 20, if they had anything other than bottom five quarterback play in the league this year, they're going to be they win the division, as I've said multiple times. So the Bengals aren't even out there. And they got Burrow. So the Browns obviously need to upgrade a quarterback, but there's no like I wasn't like actively rooting against the Bengals on Saturday. I'm not going to be like actively rooting against them on Sunday, but I will say if they make the Super Bowl, then I'll start rooting active. I'll root against them. I wouldn't want them to win a Super Bowl, but yeah, it's not like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think people really, I think people are happy. I don't know. I think it's like the Ohio State fan, you root for them at LSU, but then when he was in the division, you're just be like, oh, you're going to be in for it. And I would like to say this too, about people are always like, there's got to be a bigger story about Joe Burrow at like, oh, how did he not win the job at Ohio State? I would like people to do some research on this, or I'll just tell you what happened. Because this is what happened. He was the backup for 2 years. When he finally had the chance to compete for a starting job in spring, in the spring practice, he broke his thumb. So he was out. And then they did fall camp. It was against him and Dwayne Haskins. So when he broke his thumb, he was already behind because he didn't get the reps there. Then he lost out to Haskins in what Urban Meyer said was a very close battle. And they went with Dwayne Haskins. And look, you could look at it as pretty revisionist history because Joe Burrow went down. And his first year at LSU, he was average at best. Like, he was not very good then. They got Joe Brady, and Joe Brady was amazing. He trusted himself. He knew his arm was, because the thing about Burrow is his arm isn't great. Like, he could make the throws, but he doesn't have the Mahomes, Stafford, Allen, like the big time just cannon. He doesn't have that at all, but he could make the good throws. And he went out there and tore it up with like the best collection of skilled players probably college football's ever seen. And there's revisionist history of how could Ohio State let him go? He lost a battle. And Dwayne Haskins that first year had what, threw like 52 touchdowns and three interceptions, or 42 touchdowns and three interceptions. It wasn't like for a college quarterback, Haskins was bad. Their team just wasn't as good as the LSU team. So how did Ohio State let him slip through the cracks? They didn't let him slip through the cracks. He got injured when they were going for the battle. And that's why he wasn't named the starter.
All right. Well, there we go. A little Joe Burrow history.
Yeah. So that's the thing that I guess is just like how, when people say, man, how could he leave Ohio State? How could Ohio State not start him? You could just go look up the story of why he didn't start there.
Or if you're Colin Cowherd, how'd you let him get out of Ohio?
Yes, which they didn't let him get out of Ohio because he went to Ohio State. So, yeah, that is that. All right, Rams Chargers, or Rams 49ers, sorry. We were talking about this. This is the whole, can you beat a team three times? I don't think the numbers say you can. It's not like that big a difference. The biggest thing is Jimmy G's been terrible in the playoffs so far, both times. His thumb is busted. So are they going to be able to run the ball like they did? They got a ton of injuries. Like Trent Williams was banged up. Debo's banged up. Both of those guys I would expect to play, but how healthy are they going to be? They got Nick Bosa. He played. Warner was pretty incredible on Saturday night there. But I would, the sole pressure is on the Rams because you make the trade for Stafford. Did you hear also that if the Rams win the Super Bowl, there's rumors Sean McVay might retire?
What?
Yes. And just go work in TV.
Zero chance.
I would agree, but those are swirling out there. At 36, he would win a Super Bowl and retire and go work in TV as a game analyst.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That seems pretty crazy to me. But hey, it's out there. But the pressure's on the Rams, pressure's on Stafford. Because even if the Rams lose the Super Bowl, I don't think you can call the Stafford thing a failure. Now, if they lose in this game, I would say this season would be a failure. But you make the Super Bowl, I would say, you know what? That is, you went out, you upgraded, you got back to the Super Bowl. And I wouldn't really call the Stafford thing a failure, depending how the game unfolds and how he plays. But I think the Rams are not able to blow people out. That's why I said I'm going to tease the Niners up to 9.5. I think the Rams are going to win the game. I think it's going to be very close, but I like the Rams in the end to win this. I think Akers is going to hold on to the ball better. Cooper Kupp is going to have a good game. I think Odell's going to have a very nice game as well. He played well against the Bucs. Those are my thoughts on that.
No, I agree about the Odell thing. He's plus 1500 right now as the leading receiver in the conference championship games. I wouldn't, you know, throw a little dart, sprinkle a little ashtray money on there. He might have a nice return. You know, he's a guy that can show up in big time spots like this. And, you know, he's a competitor and everyone wants to trash him for being a diva. But when it gets down to the nitty gritty, that guy can ball out. And, you know, he's been playing really well. And I feel about the 49ers much the way I feel about the Bengals, that they've kind of, you know, moseyed on into the conference championship game. I don't think they had any business winning that Cowboys game. I mean, they had the first half, you know, in a firm grasp. And if the Cowboys play competent football in that second half, they probably come out with a victory. And then same thing last week. Like, it wasn't a dominating performance by any means for the 49ers.
They didn't score an offensive touchdown.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, they played like shit, really. Like, if you really look at it, they just played terrible and had one lucky play and then were able to manufacture a drive to get a field goal from Robbie Gould. And, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, if either the Cowboys or the Packers play just – an ounce better, the 49ers are long gone. And so, like I said, I feel much of the same about, you know, I feel better about the Bengals being in the spot than I do the 49ers. But nonetheless, hey, they're here. So you gotta tip their cap to them. But I think this is a Rams victory. I think this is 100% the Rams game to lose. Now, you said if they make it to the Super Bowl and lose, you don't think that's a Rams failure. I think if they lose here in the conference championship game to this 49ers team, I don't think you can see it as a total success. Or, you know, I don't know if it's a failure, but it's definitely not a success. Obviously, you play to win the game. Shout out Herm Edwards. You play to win the Super Bowl. But making it to the conference championship game, I don't think is enough for this team and for Stafford and McVay and what they're trying to put together.
No, I agree. They have to win to say that the trade was worth it.
Yeah.
Is what I think. But the thing about, like, Jimmy G, he just wins.
100%. Like, if they make it to the Super Bowl, his second Super Bowl as a starting quarterback, like, you got to start looking at him. I mean, we talked about this on Monday.
And injured. Like,
yeah.
Like, we always like to say, oh, quarterbacks, can they play through an injury? Can they still win games when they're injured? Like, his thumb, I know I keep harping on this a lot, but, like, you could see he cannot throw passes very well at all.
And here's, like, the other thing, too, like, not to cut you off, but if Trey Lance was any good, don't you think he'd be in there with as bad as Garoppolo's been?
No, I think it's hard to pull Jimmy G after he led them on the drive to take him to the playoffs. I'm surprised they haven't put Lance in to run just some gadget plays. Yeah. Like, just some gadget plays like that. Maybe they're saving that for this week. Also, in this, the Niners have won the last six games against the Rams. So Shanahan has McVay's number as of late. But late, Jimmy G, he knows how to win. He just wins games. It's pretty amazing. I'm all aboard the Jimmy G train. I've been aboard the Jimmy G train. I think, I did say they probably needed. I think I flip flopped on Jimmy G a little bit. I was ready for him. I wanted him after, you know, when he was with the Patriots. Then he took him to the Super Bowl, and then he kind of lost and gagged it away, and then was hurt. I was a little off him. Now I'm all aboard the Jimmy G train again. I've had
Jimmy over Baker.
Oh, for sure. 100%.
Wow.
Like, not even close. I could list you the names of quarterbacks I would take over Baker right now.
Non-starters or fringe starters. Like
you consider Jimmy G a fringe starter?
When I say fringe starter, I mean, like, not, I mean, because obviously, like, would you take Josh Allen over Baker? Like, obviously, like, yeah, would you take, okay, Mac Jones? Would you take Mac Jones over Baker?
No, I don't think so.
Tua?
Yes, I think I would.
Teddy Bridgewater?
No.
You're taking Tannehill over Baker.
Yeah, I'll just go down. I'm taking Carr over Baker. I'm taking Cousins over Baker. I'm taking Jimmy G over Baker. I'm taking
Wentz.
No, I'm not taking Wentz.
Wow.
I think Wentz and Baker are the same.
Yeah,
are the same guy. And I can't say Wentz. I want to say Wentz. I can't say Wentz. I'll take Matt Ryan over Baker.
Yeah, me too.
I
wanted Washington to go make a move for Matt Ryan this year.
I mean, there's a, like, my, if my stock on Baker is at an all-time low right now.
Sounds like it.
And it's also because he's an asshole.
What about your boy Darnold?
I'd give a run at Darnold.
Goff?
I think
Goff might be the perfect guy for the Browns right now. Just turn around, hand the ball off 30, 40 times a game to Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, and don't try to do too much. Get the ball in Jarvis Landry's hands on a slant.
Jarvis is probably going to be gone next year. So.
Oh, is he a free agent?
No, he's got like a $16 million cap hit. Oh. So they got to work around that. Look, the Browns quarterback next year is probably going to be like Kirk Cousins, which I would gladly take that because he's an upgrade over Baker. And again, I keep going to this year, but with the Browns with Kirk Cousins, they won the division by like 2 games.
Jameis?
No, I can't do Jameis. But the thing about Baker is he's an asshole. His skin is way too thin. He's now finally taking a leave. He's going Zero Dark 23 LeBron style, going off social media when he should have been off social media forever. Just have your PR people run the account. He's too online. And to be honest, during this year, I don't think his teammates really like him as much.
Commercials too.
Huh?
Too many commercials.
But they're good commercials.
Are they?
You don't think that he's a good actor in those commercials?
I wasn't talking about his acting chops. I was just talking about the commercials in general, like him living in the stadium. Kind of funny.
They're funny. Clever. Those commercials are funny.
I wasn't putting the guy on the Academy Award list or listing his acting chops. Just a few too many commercials, I think.
Well, they run the same ones over. That's not his fault. That's Progressive for buying too many ad spots. But I think he's funny in those ads.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty funny. But no, he's just too online of a quarterback right now, and you can't have that. And he's liking tweets from radio hosts on Sunday night, collecting receipts for when he plays well, of like doing all this. Like, dude, get offline. Stop it. I'm so over him. I'm definitely not a ride with Sixer. But all right, back to the Niners. Rams. I just think that Jimmy G, he's just somehow, like, I've read a bunch of stuff on him. His teammates always love him, and that's something that they play hard for that I think you really have to take into account. And that's why even when he has a bad game, they know he's still going to go out there and try and put him in a chance to win, and he leads game-winning drives. And that's what he does. So that's why I'm not thinking that this is going to be a blowout. Like, I think the Rams are going to win, but that Jimmy G's going to play better. He doesn't have to worry about the cold, which is nice. It's probably going to be a Niners home game again. And so they have that going for him. But I think the Rams win in general.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm right there with you. I think the Rams win this game. I think they're the better team by far. They're you know, by far the better. We just listed that and said that as much.
Yes.
You know, it'll be interesting to see if it is close. You know, can Kyle Shanahan manufacture another victory, or is he going to pee down his leg like we've seen him do, you know, a time or two before? And you know, I'm a big Shanahan. I like Kyle Shanahan. I like the zone run scheme that he runs, you know, much like his pops did. You know, it obviously he has, I mean, both of us, we saw Kyle Shanahan work for both teams and doesn't have too kind things to say for either of our organizations, which, hey.
Well, yeah, PowerPoint, a 30-slide PowerPoint, that why he wanted to leave the organization.
Yeah, can't really fault him for that when you look at how the organizations have both been ran. But nonetheless, like I said, I think McVay is a fantastic coach. I'd like to see him get a Super Bowl win, and I'd like to see Stafford get a Super Bowl win. I'd like to see Odell get a Super Bowl victory. You know, but what Mahomes is doing right now too is just, you know, is staggering. Like you said, never played a visiting playoff game, 4 conference championship games. I don't even think he's 26 years old yet. And, but I think the Rams are the better team, and I think we're going to see Rams Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
I agree. I think we're going to see that. All right. I've got some props here. I got up. We've already got them. We've got them cooking. No receptions here, but look, I think Kelce, the Bengals, I don't think they're very good across the middle covering tight ends. So I like Kelce like over 78. I also like him over 88 at plus 108. Jamar Chase, as I said, he's had at least 100 yards in every game except for the Browns game down the stretch. I think it's 5 of the last 6, and he only played the first quarter to get the record. You're giving me plus money at Jamar Chase at 97 yards receiving, plus 108. I'm going to take that. And then CJ Uzama, he's been like Joe Burrow's safety valve out there. he's 37 yards at minus 111 and then 47 yards at plus 110. I don't hate both of those either. I like those. So those are my, I think we're going to get a lot of passing yards in that game. So those are my props for the Chiefs Bengals game.
Yeah, no, there's a couple of those are, I like those. Those aren't bad at all. I was looking at a couple other props that were more so for the game or the conference championship weekend. I suck. I'll be honest with you. I suck when it comes to player stats. But there was a couple of darts that I thought about throwing. I told you about the most receiving yards, maybe throwing some at Odell since he is plus 1500. Sneaky, you know, kind of value pick here. Matthew Stafford for most passing yards at plus 230. Obviously, they have Mahomes and Burrow ahead of him, which I was kind of shocked there. Most rushing yards in the game, or excuse me, of the weekend. I was looking and Debo Samuel at plus 1200. Like, how do you not, again, just kind of throw a little bit of money on him? The way they've been using him, Elijah Mitchell's obviously been fantastic. He's been running the ball really, really well. They were relying heavily on Debo to run the ball when he was out, when Elijah Mitchell was out. But I still like, you know, sprinkle a little money on him at plus 1200. And then there was one other one that had to do with the weekend play for both games in general. Let me see. I was looking at it. Man, I lost it. I can't find it. I lost it here that I was just kind of perusing earlier.
All right. If there's a sacks, I would take over sacks though in the KC game. If it's like over 4.5, because I think Burrow is going to be under duress a lot. And then Mahomes, look, he gets sacks a couple times a game. All right, I do like Odell 5 catches at plus 127 in the Niners game. I like that. The receptions are pretty limited. You know who's had a pretty poor run of it lately? Is Kittle.
Yeah, hasn't been great. Had a couple, you know, drops. Luckily that fumble that wasn't, you know, that would have been backbreaking for sure in the, was that the Cowboys game?
Before the Packers game, his last four games of the regular season, he didn't get higher than 29 receiving yards. Now, I hate going under on receiving yards, but I think Kittle at like 63 might not be a bad play to go under. If there is receptions, you know who's getting some run of it lately? I think this is going to be a game you might see a little Kyle Juszczyk going on here.
Yeah.
Well, maybe over like
plus 10,000 to be the leading receiver.
I don't like that. Right, but like, but anytime touchdown, where he's plus 700 for a touchdown. I like that. And the other dart I like for a touchdown is Stafford. He's had touchdowns and he's had quarterback sneaks in two of the last three games. He's at plus 700. So when they get down there, they're not afraid to sneak it. So that's not a bad, those two I don't think are bad for touchdown scores.
Yeah, no, not at all.
All right. That's all I have prop wise right now, but all right. Lastly, we'll get to Baseball Hall of Fame. Feel like we talk about this every year. Because
baseball writers are a bunch of wieners and gonads, a bunch of friggin' dorks. Hold on. Got a chance to play baseball after the age of 9.
Not the majority of them want Bonds and Clemens in the Hall of Fame. Like 65% of them do. It's the other 35 that don't, that you need to single out rather than, because the majority of them, and really over 2/3 of them, think they should be in the Hall of Fame. They just can't get to the 75% threshold.
And see, I think that's the part that's stupid. The 75% threshold. If more than 2/3 of the guys that have a vote a guy in, that should be it. Done deal. They're in.
I don't hate the 75%. I think I differ with you there.
Why is that? Because like you want a guy to like be definitive, like Hall of Famer.
Yes, the Hall of Fame.
Look at the NBA. Like they literally put everybody in the Hall of Fame. They put Tracy McGrady in the NBA Hall of Fame. I love Tracy McGrady. Probably one of my favorite basketball players ever. That guy's not a Hall of Famer. He was a very good basketball player.
But that's the thing. Like it's not the Hall of Very Good, and there has to be some. No one looks at the Basketball Hall of Fame the same way they look at the Pro Football Hall of Fame or say the Baseball Hall of Fame before their debacle the last 10 years. Like those are like there's prestige to being a baseball Hall of Famer and a pro football Hall of Famer. There's not a lot of prestige about being in the pro basketball Hall of Fame. It's a nice thing on your hand, but everybody's in it. That's the thing. There's like you rank the Hall of Fames. I would put baseball and football at the top, and then it's basketball like a step below. So there's prestige to it. Like for the NFL Hall of Fame, it takes 80% of the 34 or 40 person committee to get to be enshrined.
Maybe they just need to change who votes every couple of years. You know what I mean?
Ding, 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 ding. They need to add more of the younger people to vote is what they need to do.
Yeah.
Like old Billy Wagner. You think Billy Wagner's a Hall of Famer?
No, he was a
he's
very
in the
good
Hall
voter.
Of very good.
Yeah.
I would even say like Todd Helton, Hall of very good.
Yeah.
Now you got 45%, like very, very good players. But you start letting in people like in the Hall of very good, it diminishes, I think, the Hall a little bit.
Oh, no, it absolutely does. And, you know, and I get it. But again, maybe they just need to go about it a little bit different of how the voting process is done. Either change out who votes every couple years. Maybe you only have 5 years on the committee. If you don't vote for somebody 1 year, bang, you're out. You're done. Because why even have your vote? I mean,
you can only vote for 10. They have 40 people on the ballot.
Right. So if you vote for zero of them, you shouldn't have to vote again. You should.
Well,
there's
like one guy that does that.
Right. So again, that guy revoke his vote. Like if you can't vote for one of these guys, then you don't deserve to be voting at all. So it's a joke. Everyone wants to say, oh, the steroid era. Steroids single-handedly saved baseball. I mean, Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before he took steroids. And then guess what? The summer of 98 happens. He sees guys like Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire. He sees guys like Ken Caminiti and friggin' Brady Anderson. Go from hitting 2 home runs to hitting 51 home runs, and then he bounces the year after that. Like, Barry Bonds was one of the best baseball players we had ever seen, even before the steroid era started. And then guess what? He was like, well, shit, these guys are doing it. They're putting up monster numbers. They're getting all this notoriety. Nobody's saying anything, so why wouldn't I? And so he did. And guess what? He was just as good as he was, and then now all of a sudden he hit a ball.
Just as good?
Well, no, that's what I was saying. He was just as good as he already was, but then now he could hit the ball 500 feet with any swing of the bat because he was already as good as he was, you know, with his hands, his hand-eye coordination, you know, stealing bases, yada, yada. The list goes on and on. Like, you're a true five-tool player. And then again, they weren't testing. They weren't turning a blind. They were turning a blind eye to it all. And all of a sudden, such a black eye on baseball. Well, let's talk about the amphetamine use in the 70s and 80s when guys were using greenies or putting greenies in their coffee or out there doing cocaine or Doc Gooden on acid throwing no hitters. Like, why don't we ever turn? Why do we turn a blind eye to that stuff? It's talked about, but it's not held in the same regard as the steroid era. You know what I mean? I'm still of the thought. Now, maybe this is a little radical, but let them take steroids. You know what I mean? And obviously, you put player safety at risk because guys are going to be swinging the bat way faster and balls are going to be coming off the bat way harder. Guys are going to be able to throw harder. Injuries are going to be more prevalent because steroids has been shown to break down your body. But it's like steroids should be in the Hall of Fame for baseball because they single-handedly brought baseball back and saved baseball starting in the late 90s. All the way up until the mid 2000s, when all of a sudden they wanted to start cracking down on it because everybody was able to be good.
I mean, like Bonds was a Hall of Famer before and everything. I agree. I'm looking at I think probably every year I go back and look at his baseball reference page. It is pretty hilarious. He never had a season where he hit 50 home runs, except for the 1 year he had 73. He never hit 50. He never hit 60. He hit 49 once. That was his second high ever in hitting home runs, was 49, which is amazing. He also, for 4 straight years, he had over a 515 on base percentage. And then in 2004, when he was 39, he had a 609 on base percentage, which is unbelievable. He had... In 617 plate appearances, he walked, I would say, 50% of the time because he had 300 and 52 walks. 120 of those were intentional walks. So he had 352 walks in 617 at bats. The fact that he even hit, he had 135 hits, that's impressive. Or in plate appearances, sorry. So he had 373 at bats. The fact that he got 135 hits, that's amazing. The biggest problem that I have is that they are being selective on what steroid users they want in the Hall of Fame and what steroid users they don't want in the Hall of Fame.
Ding, ding, ding. David Ortiz.
Yes. But like Tom Verducci, who is the ultimate, like, takes this. Tom Verducci takes his Hall of Fame vote as serious as he would take, that's his moral compass, is his Hall of Fame vote, I think. Like, he takes it so seriously, and he writes all this stuff every year, blah, blah, blah. Like, baseball writers love voting for the Hall of Fame. And I think Verducci's, like, a good reporter, a fine writer, whatever. But when they start doing this Hall of Fame, I just, like, roll my eyes. You cannot be selective. You cannot say, oh, a man named in the Mitchell Report, as David Ortiz was, but then he never tested positive when they started the testing and all that stuff, when you clearly see his body grow. He was an average at best hitter in Minnesota, and then he goes to Boston, and after he's named in the Mitchell Report, turns into one of the greatest hitters the game's seen. Like, you can't play selectiveness on your Hall of Fame, on your steroid users. Mm-hmm. You like Ortiz, you can't. Jim Thome took steroids. They all took steroids. Look at Jim Thome when he came into the league, and then when he finished, he got fat and he got big. Like, that's a steroid guy, right? Like, all these guys are steroid guys. You can't be selective on who you think's going to be doing the steroids. That's the whole double standard is where they just lose me. And the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame has really no affiliation from Major League Baseball. And this is the problem where we've got at, and I've talked about before, it's an independent entity. Same Correct. Thing with the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's an independent entity from the NFL. But since the NFL is the biggest league and that Major League Baseball is the biggest league, you just think that they're together. They're separate. But the failure of whoever runs the baseball Hall of Fame, I don't even know who it is, and then Rob Manfred, of them coming together and not showing guidelines for what they have is just a failure, because the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame is a history museum. It's supposed to show the history of baseball, who are the players for the history of baseball that have shaped the game. You cannot tell the story of baseball without including Roger Clemens, without including Barry Bonds, without including Mark McGwire, without including Rafael Palmeiro, without including Alex Rodriguez. All of these guys have shaped the history of baseball, and they're not even in there. It's a museum. How they are not in there, because these old sports writers don't want them in. Only about 35% of them don't want them in. Is just baffling, and they don't give enough younger writers the votes to get them in. It's just very frustrating. It's very frustrating.
100%. It is. And like I said, everybody was doing it, like you said. And you know, the whole thing of, look at guys coming in the league versus when they left, like, yeah, that is definitely,
like, I know your body grows when you're from your 20s, when you're 20 to when you're 40. I understand that.
Yeah.
But you could tell early on when
drastic changes. Yeah, 100%. Yes. I mean, look at Frank Thomas. I mean, the guy's still out here pushing testosterone, because guess what? His test levels probably fell through the floor when he stopped taking steroids. You know what I mean? And so,
but he's in the Hall of Fame.
100%. And see, that's the other thing. So we talk about David Ortiz. We talk about Frank Thomas. We talk about all these guys that are, you know, steroid users, wink, wink. We're not sure or not. Yeah, we do know. But because of how defiant Barry Bonds was, because of how defiant Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Roger Clemens, all these guys that are being held out because of how defiant they were of saying, no, I didn't take steroids. Like, I never tested positive. Sure, I was, mentioned in the Mitchell Report. And so they were dicks to these guys, to these writers, the guys that have the votes. That's why now they're using their personal vendettas and using their, kind of turning their nose up to them and being all hoity-toity, saying, oh, well, guess what? You were mean to me. Well, guess what? You're not going to be a Hall of Famer. Everybody knows that Roger Clemens should be in the Hall of Fame. Everybody knows Barry Bonds, all the guys we just listed should be in the Hall of Fame and are known as Hall of Famers. Now, you know, what do they always say about, you know, the highest authority is the people's court? You know, like, there's not anybody out there that's in the right frame of mind that should deny that any of those guys, like you said, you can't tell the story of baseball without any of those guys. Roger Clemens, look at him in the 80s and 90s when he was pitching with the Red Sox, as dominant pitchers we've seen, you know, before the steroid era. Granted, yeah, he probably took steroids in the late 90s when he was, you know, older, when he's 40, 41, 42. He was pretty much, you know, almost admitted that he took HGH along with Andy Pettit. Again, who wasn't? Show me a guy that wasn't.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so I'm looking at the ballot and the votes. First of all, Scott Rolen, 63% of the vote seems very high.
Very, another, like, Hall of Very Good. Hall,
yes,
of Very Good.
Hall of Very Good.
He was a good player on some good teams for the Cardinals at the time. Hall of Very Good.
Hall of Very Good. All right, so let's go look at the bottom of the ballot. This is the first time I'm looking at it. There were two. Have you seen it or not?
I was trying to look for it earlier when you were talking. Where did you find it?
It's MLB. Just type in a 2022 Hall of Fame ballot, and the MLB.com has the results. Two players got zero votes. So I think if you get under 5%, yeah, you're off the ballot. So we have 11 players off the ballot this year. Two people got zero votes. Take a look at a blank ballot if you can, and you can try and name them.
I'm trying to
find... If you can find a blank ballot.
Here we go. I think I got the
results.
Results here. Yeah, maybe nope. Not. Go ahead.
The two people that got zero votes were Jake Peavy and Carl Crawford.
Rightfully so. Fine baseball players.
When I tell you, now we get into players that got two votes.
Okay.
AJ Pierzynski and Prince Fielder.
Prince Fielder, again, very good baseball player. AJ Pierzynski might be known best for getting punched in the face by Mike Barrett.
Why he got more votes than Carl Crawford and Jake Peavy, I don't understand that. We have now two players with five votes. That was Mississippi State legend Jonathan Papelbon, and then Canadian baseball player Justin Morneau, both got five votes.
Justin Morneau, again, very good. I think Papelbon's Canadian too, no?
He might be. I don't know. All I know is he went to Mississippi State.
Very good baseball player for a very good, you know, World Series team. Justin Morneau, very consistent, very good baseball player, not a Hall of Famer.
All right. I agree. Look, I'm not saying any of these are Hall of Famers. I'm just interested that these guys are getting that
votes. But yeah, right. And that's why I'm saying.
I'm not saying, look, you have 10 people on the ballot. Vote for who you think's in the Hall of Fame. That's fine. I'm like AJ Pierzynski. How do you get two votes? This one at six votes, Mark Teixeira got six votes. I thought he might get a little more votes.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but is that like the steroid thing with him or something? I thought he would get a little more than six votes.
And you look at him, probably one of the best switch hitters we've seen in baseball in quite some time.
Yeah, yeah. Look,
not ever.
Hall of very good. Not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but definitely surprised he's like off the ballot. Also very surprised that Ryan Howard somehow is now off the ballot, as he got eight votes. But I guess 13 years isn't long enough, and really your last 5 years in baseball, you only hit 25 bombs.
He was ahead of his time. Right now Ryan Howard would be coveted
also, but like he was Hall of Fame worthy for 4 years, and you can't really do that. You need more years there. Yeah. Like he won an MVP, a rookie of the year, finished second and third in MVP, like very good. He only made one All-Star game. No, he didn't. He made three All-Star games. That's it. Then we have Tim Lincecum, also Hall of Fame for about 4 years of his career, but not long enough.
Yeah.
Tim Hudson and then Joe Nathan, those gentlemen who I just named are off the ballot for next year. Joe Nathan got 17 votes. Tim Hudson got 12 votes. Surprising guy made over 5%. Torrey Hunter, 21 votes. He's not a Hall of Famer, but somehow he worked his way 21 votes.
He's getting some good guy votes there.
He is getting some good guy votes there. The other, I guess, the names that are interesting, I guess, out there, like Sammy Sosa, final year of the ballot, 18%. He's done. Manny Ramirez is a Hall of Famer, but he's only getting 29%, so he's got no chance there. A-Rod's at 34%. I'm surprised with him like being a media good guy now that he's not working his way in there.
So A-Rod's off the ballot?
No, he's not off the ballot, but he's got like 7 years left, but only 34%. Like, come on.
Yeah. Both him, again, him and Manny Ramirez. I think that, you know, A-Rod definitely had a tumultuous relationship with the media. So again, both those guys there, I think those are these baseball nerds and dorks trying to get back at them. And yes, a lot of that with too, the steroid stuff too, again, like we just talked about.
All right. And then I don't really know who else. Todd Helton got 52%. Andrew Jones. People think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know. He's in the Hall of Very Good. 41%. But yeah. And then David Ortiz got, I think he made it by like 4 votes or something. So that's the Baseball Hall of Fame. Next year, let's see who is coming up on the ballot next year. We have newcomers are going to be Carlos Beltran.
Nope.
I don't think so. Francisco Rodriguez. Relievers are never going to make the Hall of Fame, especially Francisco Rodriguez. We have, okay, other ones that have been there, but these people will not make it. It's John Lackey, Jared Weaver, Jacoby Ellsbury. He's been retired for 5 years.
It seems like 10.
Matt Cain, Jahani Peralta, Hudson Street, Jason Worth, Mike Napoli, Ari Dickey, Carlos Ruiz, Ubaldo Jimenez, Andre Ethier, and Glenn Perkins are all also on the ballot for the first time. And I would say probably all those guys are going to be kicked off the ballot in their first time. Maybe Matt Cain gets through a second time, but I'm going to say all those guys don't make it.
Yeah. All those guys had, you know, a few years of,
Matt Cain was great.
Yeah. Of good baseball, but no Hall of Famers there.
No.
Shout out Andre Ethier. I know his brother and his sister. Cool dude.
Shout out to Ubaldo Jimenez.
And I actually know them. They would, if I walked down the street and saw them, they'd know who I was. I played baseball with his younger brother. He was a year older than me. We went to the same high school. I won't say anything about his sister. She's a very nice young lady as well.
All right. That will do it for us. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back on Monday or Tuesday next week. Enjoy your trip to Vegas, Ryan.
I appreciate it. One quick thing before you sign off. I was a little apprehensive. I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to record today. I thought you might be down at City Hall protesting.
What's protesting at City Hall today?
They're trying to make sure that strip clubs stay open past 2 a.m.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I didn't even know that. Serious. I didn't know what they were protesting.
Mm-hmm. If you looked up strip club guy in the dictionary, Warren Shore's picture would be plastered all over it.
What? That's far kidding. From the case.
I'm just kidding.
No, I didn't know. Look, I hope they get their wish.
Me too.
I hope they get their wish. Because the NBA All-Star game or the Super Bowl ain't coming here anytime soon. So that's only when they get those extended hours.
Yep.
It's tough for them. And look,
just so we have it on record, you hope that the law passes so they have to close at 2 a.m. or you're hoping that they remain open till 4 or 5 a.m.?
They're open till 4 a.m. here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 4 or 5 a.m. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I didn't see. I didn't know that.
If I had a nickel for every time I left the strip club and went right into work, poof.
You'd have a lot of nickels. I didn't know that. No, I hope they don't change the law then.
Yeah. That's the law. They're trying to get them to close at 2 a.m., whereas right now they stay open until 5.
Gotcha. All right. Didn't know that. So good luck to all those workers out there.
And the protesters.
And the protesters want it closed?
No.
Or are they protesting to keep it open?
Correct. They're protesting to keep them open.
Okay. Yeah. So the workers are going to be out there protesting.
Yeah. But from what the videos and pictures I've seen, unless there's more male strip clubs than I thought here in Dallas, I didn't see a whole lot of female protesters out there.
You think a lot of regulars are out there protesting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it looked like? Yeah. All right. Well, it's good to see that they use their vacation day wisely.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't use your American voice to protest something you believe in, then what are you even doing?
Yep, that's for sure. All right. Have a good weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.